Welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast, a peek behind the curtain of what it's really like to drive other people's cars for a living. These are the stories behind the stories. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Top Gear Magazine podcast. I'm Jack Ricks. This is Ollie Q.
Hello.
This is Ollie Marriage.
Hello.
Hello. And it's launch day. It's a big day because we are launching a new magazine. I'm doing inverted commas with my fingers because it's not a magazine in the way that we think of magazines. It's certainly
can't
not.
Can't buy one in a shop.
Can't buy one in a shop.
Not made of paper.
No. Yeah. You can't actually buy one full stop because it this is getting complicated, because you can only read this new publication, it's called Top Gear Tech, if you are an Apple News Plus subscriber. I think we'll call it a digital edition then. That's probably a better name.
Yeah, magazine's
virtual
an oldie
mag.
World yeah.
A virtual mag. There's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, let us know in the comments below what you would call this thing. But so I wanted to, take some time to explain what it is and why we're doing it. And I think probably start by saying what Apple News Plus is, because there's probably a lot of you out there that don't know about this. This is a new, a newish. It's been around for quite a few years. All you can read platform. So if you pay Apple some money, then you can go on here and read magazines from all over the world, from all sorts of different topics.
Huge variety.
Huge variety. Yeah. I'll be honest, almost an overwhelming variety when you go on there and go, my cycling magazine, my camera magazine, my car magazine. But to be honest, all you need to do is subscribe to the Top Gear channel and you'll be absolutely fine. But you pay a subscription and you can read all these magazines in a really mobile-friendly format. So they're redesigned for you to read on your phone or your laptop or your tablet. And obviously we have the main Top Gear magazine goes on there every month, the same time that it goes on sale in the shops, or if you're a subscriber, the same time it lands on your doorstep. So we wanted to sort of expand our repertoire, really, and produce something that was a little bit more targeted to that audience and just sort of broadened our horizons. Hence, Top Gear Tech. So the idea being behind this one, the focus is more on electric cars. We can discuss the sort of philosophy behind this, but electric cars for TopGear.com and for the main magazine, they're kind of infused into sort of everything we do. I think there was a time when we were, electric cars were first coming onto the scene and becoming a very real part of the landscape, that we were like, oh, we need specific how-tos on electric cars and we need specific this and specific that. And now, really, they're just they're just cars.
Yeah.
It's a very nice and succinct way of putting it. They're just cars. So the idea with Top Gear Tech is that, there'll be definitely a more heavy focus on electric cars over here, but also future car tech and all these kind of big, broad topics that are coming at us.
In-car tech,
all
that sort of stuff. Yeah. Plenty of it.
Trends, the future. It's what, that people I've been reading on Apple News Plus have been asking for. So giving the people what they want.
Giving the people what they want. So just to give you a little sort of flavour of what you might find in issue one of Top Gear Tech, which is on Apple News Plus today, unless something's gone horribly wrong. Hopefully it hasn't.
We're just rebooting the dial-up in the BBC office as we speak.
Well, first of all, you'll see a very cool animated cover, because, of course, the joy of digital is... you probably could have an animated cover in print, but it would cost a lot of money to have a screen on front of every magazine.
Stuck on an iPad.
There's probably someone out there. We'll do that. Cool animated cover. And the idea is in each issue, we have one big sort of central feature that really attacks these sort of topics that we're all kind of thinking about, or we're going to have to deal with whether we like it or not.
The questions of our time, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, that's a very sort of weighty title for it.
As a regular panorama.
Questions of our time. That heavy. We're still having fun. Don't worry.
No. We're still having fun. So the first story here is Paul Horrell, aided by Rowan Horncastle, taking pictures, have been on a battery swap road trip. So this is the idea of this technology, that rather than having to sit around for 20 minutes, half an hour or longer while your battery charges, you can literally drive into an automated pod, drops the battery out the bottom of the car, slots another one in, and off you go with another 300 miles.
That's how you played with your remote control cars when you're a kid. Yeah, you know, the batteries went flat And then you bought new ones, you stuff those in, you nick them out of the TV remote while your parents aren't looking, and off you go again.
Yeah.
So why can't we do that with a full-size car? Let's go.
Yeah, and we actually did. We were one of the first to sort of experience this battery swap tech in China. It was about five years ago.
Yeah, way back in 2019.
Yeah, Rowan went actually to China with Tom Harrison, one of the guys who was working with us at the time, did it with Neo over there.
Yeah, Neo at that point had only sort of set up that battery swapping infrastructure over in China. So we had to go over there and test it.
I think it was literally the first... There may have been more than one station by that time, actually, but this was literally the first station.
Yeah.
So it was literally, let's go for a drive, see what this battery swap thing is all around. So 5 years later, there's now, I think, about 2,500 battery swap stations across the world. I think I read in China now, it's really catching on. Every 3 seconds, someone does a battery swap.
Wow.
In a Neo. Yeah. Neo's obviously looking to kind of branch out and license out this technology to work with other EV manufacturers, because you obviously have to have standard fittings and dimensions for the battery. But they've arrived in Europe. So there's 35, 40 stations in Europe, kind of strategically placed around Holland, Germany.
Strategically not placed in England.
Scandinavia.
Yeah.
In these kind of very neat lines that, you know, so you can do these road trips. So that's essentially what we've packed off Paul and Roan to do, which is go on a very long road trip only using battery swap technology and just sort of discuss the
topic.
They're
off
really
through Norway, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. I think they're going as far north as Lillehammer.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's quite Northern Lights territory,
nah,
is it?
To be honest, anywhere can be Northern Lights territory. I don't think they get into the Arctic Circle, though.
At which point, battery performance would fall off a cliff. So probably for the best.
Good test of the old swapping, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So that's, you know, we're going to be approaching topics like this, but obviously, as you say, keeping it fun. It's going to be some amazing photography, Rowan. No pressure.
But what we should say as well is that the great thing about this being a digital edition is that it lives forever. It's not like, you know, the paper Top Gear mag where if you're on holiday, you're busy and you somehow miss going to the shops and then the magazine's gone off sale. This will forever be just a couple of taps away. So even if it's a question that you're not looking to ask now, a couple of years time, you've gone electric and you're getting annoyed with the charging, you think, oh, I wish we could swap batteries. This story will be lying in wait for you.
Oh, I just had an idea, actually, while we're here. So if you're listening on Spotify, there's a really cool sort of commenting function underneath the podcast. Let us know what sort of topics you want to hear about. You just tell us whether it's, you know, charging, or it might be hydrogen, or it might be synthetic fuels, or it might be, I don't know, ChatGPT.
Yeah.
Built into cars.
Voice assistants, touch screens, and augmented reality in cars. Yeah. What future topics are you excited for, and which ones are you worried about?
Yeah, I was going to say excited about or really dreading. And we'll try and approach it with a sort of, you know, with a bit of fun. And
but we'll go and ask the punchy questions to the people that when you're shouting at your car, going, shut up, telling me to look at the road. Busy in the touchscreen trying to turn the wipers on. We can go and speak to the man who designed that, or woman, and ask them what they were playing
and shout at them. Yeah. In a very polite way. Right, so what else is in the issue? So this big sort of central feature, and there's loads of other good stuff. So we're going to be spooling up Professor Paul Horrell, getting him to explain how stuff works.
Not actually a professor, but probably cleverer than most professors.
Yeah, no, I think he's an honorary professor. He's certainly a professor in the Top Gear office. So I think, first issue, he's going to be explaining the fiercely complicated new suspension on the Porsche Panamera and the Porsche Taycan.
Have you seen it jiggling around, though?
Oh, it's so cool.
I mean, just, they are having a
honestly,
laugh
if you
now,
haven't seen
they?
This, there's some way that the engineer, I'm not sure if this function is available to owners, but connects the suspension on the new Panamera to his smartphone. So as he sort of waves his phone about in 3D space, the car reacts and jiggles around.
Because it's got this thing on it where basically the car will it's got complete anti-dive, anti-lean. It will actually lean into corners. It's an incredibly powerful active suspension. We've seen
we've seen it before a bit. Mercedes did it.
Mercedes tried to make the S-Class Coupe lean into corners, but I think people complained they got a bit seasick with it, and it wasn't quite... It was a bit of a niche concern and all the rest of it, but Porsche saying, this is mainstream, and I've actually ridden in the Taycan Turbo GT, which has also got this, and going around Laguna Seca with Lars Kern, their hot shoe racing driver, I mean, through the corkscrew, there was no body roll. I mean, get your head around that, all the negative G and the change of direction there, and the thing stays absolutely flat, and it just gives the engineers this perfect platform to work the tyres and work the aero, but it also is great news for a luxury saloon like the Panamera, because it means you can cleverly disconnect it and make it more comfortable.
Everything's completely independently set up, so it's not like the sort of hydraulically cross-linked stuff that McLaren have and that new Range Rover Sport SV.
As far as I'm aware, it's like the next kind of generation leap on from that.
Four corners, four totally
completely
independent
separate actuators and stuff.
But it's, I mean, we've seen similar stuff with like Ferrari on the Purosangue, put those very powerful electric motors on the top of the suspension turrets, and then you can torque and anti-torque it and try and keep this thing from waddling around. But it's, as ever with these technology, what people want is the gimmick. So like when you might have seen Maybachs and Mercedes a few years ago, they had this sand shaker mode, where if you got your car stuck in a sand dune...
Was that the sort of GLS... Maybach.
It could basically, the car could twerk to free itself of... Well, we can stick a clip up for the video, but the car could twerk itself out of a sand dune, and you have these people going doing doing down the road. Well, now you can do that in a Porsche Panamera, but remotely from your phone. I mean, the potential for showing off and having really quite hard to explain accidents is boundless.
So essentially what we're saying is tech is not always a good thing. You know, sometimes it will become heavier and more complicated, but if you've got a really silly gimmick that we can condense into
can
a 30-second TikTok video,
we want to see it.
You've succeeded. So loads of other stuff in each issue. Travel tech. So this is going to be loads of stuff and gadgets and travel tech in as much as, so long as you can use it when you're on the move, then it's eligible for this section. So you may have to revise on the sort of outdoors gear, Ollie. Clothing, tents, all sorts of stuff like that.
You're the underwater proofed man.
That's why I shaved my head.
We're gonna have sort of roundups of the newest EVs that are coming. We're gonna get a crystal ball out and have a sort of rendering of a future EV and sort of tell you everything we know about it.
The manufacturer would rather we didn't, basically. We're just gonna vomit our notebook out and tell you everything anyway.
Yeah. So you can't be wrong if the actual details aren't out there yet.
No.
You just say it with confidence, don't you?
Elon Musk.
Exactly. And then something called 6 months with. So obviously you'll be familiar with our long-term reports on topgear.com and also in the main mag. But the idea is to roll them all together, so you get that full six-month
compilation.
Of living with a long-termer, which is a really powerful tool, actually. My brother-in-law was thinking about getting a Dacia Jogger, and I was sort of giving him the sort of two-minute elevator pitch where I thought it was quite good. And he went on topgear.com. Sam Phillip ran the jogger, didn't he?
That's right.
And he said it was brilliant because you have day one, car arrives. How was that process? What are your initial impressions? Month one, month two, month three, all the way through to month six. By the time you've got 6 months through, you've answered every possible question.
You've got the full picture of what it's like to live with. And why that's particularly helpful, I think, with future tech and with EVs is, you know, with so many of these cars now, we spend half our time signing into them, don't you? I mean, Ollie, with your EQE that you're living with, I mean, it probably knows more about you than your beloved.
I'm slightly worried. I've asked Mercedes what data it knows about me.
I mean, yes, we've got all that thing to get into. And also, if it's the height of summer and you're browsing Apple News Plus and you're thinking, I really would fancy going electric, but I'm a bit worried about what this is like to live with through the winter, chances are we have done that and we've driven it in the cold and the wet and the snow, and we can tell you how much range it's lost, how much longer it took to charge, you know, what the battery degradation was, so we can kind of bring you all of that ownership in a one-stop shop.
Don't you have to guess
now? That's what I call a review of name of car here.
That's a good name for it, actually. And then we've got some fun stuff, so retro car tech. Sam Phillips going to be taking this one on, the strapline being they were the future once. So tape decks, iTrip. Does anyone remember the iTrip?
Was that the little FM transmitter thing that you connected into your 12 volt and you could play?
No, you'd stick it in the bottom of your iPod and it would
It created an incredibly localized pirate radio station, basically, which you could then tune your radio.
The reception was invariably crap.
Yeah, if you went under a bridge, all of a sudden you got loads of static and then sort of like, I don't know, Lithuanian rugby results. It was just like, where's this come from?
I remember it. So there was also a tape. Do you remember there was literally, if you only had a tape player, you put the tape in and then there was essentially an aux sleeve that came out of the tape. So you could plug your MP3 into a tape.
Like you put a tampon in your
tape
deck.
How did that even work? It was the most bizarre marriage of digital and analog.
People with Apple CarPlay, you don't know you're born. The way we used to try and trick our cars into playing our music.
Or even just, you know, the simple beauty of a CD auto changer in the boot.
Oh, yeah.
Which our kids will just think is the funniest thing ever. So lots of fun to be had there. And then the EV hot list as well. So just like Ollie was saying there, if you're thinking about buying an electric car, then, you know, this is what you want to check out. It's basically the top five of everything. So every possible category we can think of for electric cars, but then also some fun ones, you know, the top five cheapest EVs out there, the longest range EVs out there, the worst EVs out there. Don't go near them with a barge pole. So, yeah, you've got that really easy sort of reference. And then we've got Marques Brownlee. So if you're a magazine reader or his work goes on the website on topgear.com as well, he currently writes once a month a review of an electric car for us. The idea being Marques Brownlee, if you don't know him, he's the sort of YouTube's top tech reviewer.
Tech god of YouTube.
Tech god of YouTube, but he's also really into his cars as well. So it's a really nice way of getting a different angle. You know, we're all old fogey motoring writers who like oversteer and nibbly primary rides.
How dare you? Tertiary ride.
Whereas he approaches cars in a completely different way. You know, he's really concerned about the software and the user experience, and obviously the technology behind the batteries and the motors and stuff like that. But less about the driving dynamics. And I think it's a really refreshing viewpoint because more and more that's where car buyers are coming from.
And being on the other side of the pond, it allows us at Top Gear
Tech.
Oh,
he's American, by the way.
Yeah, but it allows us to do something that you simply won't get in any other British mag or website, because, you know, they're not selling the Cadillac Lyric or the Tesla Cybertruck over here. Mm. So no one's going to be telling you what those are like to live with and what they got on with inside. Whereas Marques, he is, because he's had access to all of them and he's spent loads of time in them and he's going to continue to. So from him, we get perspectives you simply won't find anywhere else.
Exactly. So we're redirecting his efforts from doing the car review a month in the main mag over here to TG Tech, where he's going to be doing a column every month exploring different sort of future technologies, things that basically we don't fully understand, but he can shine some light on. The first of which is, will Apple Vision Pro, which these are
that new Apple's VR headset
new
thing.
VR headset and cars ever mix?
This sounds like a very bad idea.
Yeah. No, don't worry. There's lots and
I mean,
lots
I feel
of,
like some judging by some TikToks I've seen, they're already mixing.
Yeah.
And they really ought not to be.
Yes. Let's be very clear, kids. They should not mix. You are not allowed to wear VR goggles. And no matter how good the pass-through mode is through the cameras, you're not allowed to drive a car when you're wearing these. But this is what Marques can do. He can sort of project into the future, see where these technologies are heading, and then kind of play around with the idea of whether we'll ever get to a point where it's sort of feasible. Speaking of which, I actually caught up with Marques earlier to talk to him about that and a load of other things. He's actually bought a Tesla Cybertruck, so he's now
where his mouth is.
Yeah, so he's now deep into the actual ownership experience, and there are some panel gaps. He's also there's quite a controversy.
Is he shot it yet?
Is he shot? Well, I don't know. I'll ask him
with a camera or a gun.
If he hasn't, we'll get him to shoot it live on the podcast, or at least just do a sort of gun sound effect in the background. Lots to talk about. Yeah, that, his new column, and there was also quite a controversial video about the Fisker Ocean.
Oh, he might have actually killed Fisker once and for all.
He might have. I'm going to give him the benefit of...
well, he's achieved something we haven't. They won't lend us a car at the moment. This might be why.
Yeah, here we go. We're coming full circle.
Let's see what he's got to say.
Yeah, here's Marques.
It's interesting. Obviously, you don't drive around today wearing a VR headset. You know, it seems fun, but don't do it, right?
So are you confirming that you haven't done it?
I have not done it. No, yeah. I have not done it. I've seen videos, though, of other people doing it. But, you know, the funny thing about Vision Pro is it is probably the best. I'm not saying to do it, but it's probably the best one to do it in because it has the shortest latency from the cameras. All that to say, on the other side of the spectrum of things you wear on your face and tech is these smart glasses, which are already pretty cool. Like, they have little computers in the bands and little cameras on the front of them, and they're pretty useful. And I've recorded videos using them. And the goal of those is to just add more stuff to it while always looking like a pair of glasses. And so what's interesting is those are adding more tech but looking like glasses. And things like Vision Pro and VR headsets are trying to look more and more like glasses while keeping all the tech they have. And so they're kind of moving towards each other, interestingly. So that's been fun to watch. And I think today, if you ask me which one is more useful to me, it's actually the glasses with the camera and the little speaker and just like the basic stuff while looking pretty reasonable, and I can wear it in more situations, like while I'm driving.
Is it legal to actually use them while you're driving? I feel like it's kind of a, well, they're kind of sunglasses, so how, you're not going to arrest me for wearing sunglasses, right? Or if the police knew that there was, I don't know, speakers and cameras and voice tech built into these glasses, would they stop you? I don't know.
It's a good question. I think technically, yeah, it is legal, but, you know, tech changes fast, so that might be a question that gets reevaluated.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about how, let's just assume the Vision Pro was legal from behind the wheel, because, you know, the cameras, as you say, are so good. You've got this amazing pass-through mode. You know, you're seeing what's in front of you through the goggles. What would that kind of interface look like? Because, you know, I just use Apple CarPlay. Every car I get into now, my phone hooks up, CarPlay, boom. So you can imagine some sort of new interface of Apple CarPlay that just beams into your goggles. You don't need screens in the car. You got your music in one corner, like a nav arrow in another corner. You could have like your speedo and, you know, rev counter and stuff all in front of you. Is that what you're imagining?
I would go even a little further. I think, you know, you get to take the screens out the car because all the screens are on your face already. But then you can overlay like your nav onto the road in front of you instead of just a little arrow. Like you can just follow the blue line on the road. As the thing turns, you just follow the line. It can be that, you know, immersive. There's some HUDs that kind of do a little bit of that, but yeah, you could get crazy with that. And I'm sure like you could gamify. If everyone wants to gamify everything, why not put little coins over the road while we're at it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, part of me thinks, damn, isn't this all just too distracting? You know, already, like, the fact that Tesla puts everything in one, like, 17-inch screen in the middle of the dash, and that's it. You know, as, like, sort of traditional car journalists, we've been sort of banging the table about buttons disappearing for, like, ages. I know you're the same. You like physical controls and stuff, but there's a point where you're, like, once you get to know the car, you know where the menus are and you kind of know where to hit. When you first get into it and you're trying to drive and you're trying to like change the temperature and stuff, it's just dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, I was thinking about that just because, and you say like traditional car people probably prefer switches. I kind of have been wondering about the general population on this, because I think if I just say the sentence, real buttons are better than on-screen buttons, I think everyone would intuitively agree. But Tesla, in this quest for saving money, they don't want anything they don't have to pay for. No buttons is totally fine. The best-selling car in the world is the Model Y, and it doesn't have any of the buttons we like. So do we really like the buttons that much? Or are we willing to forego the buttons for other things? Like, where on the priority list is it? It's been interesting to sort of keep an eye on that. And then, of course, everyone likes copying the winners. So people see Tesla's success, they start getting rid of their buttons, and it's like, that wasn't the thing that we wanted, guys. That's not the thing we all like.
You've hit the nail on the head there. People like to say, oh, I've got a preference for this or I got a preference for that. But at the end of the day, I think people are driven by price. That is just, they'll pretend that it's, you know, a taste decision or they're just in tune with a certain brand. But really it's like, oh, that's got a good monthly deal on it. Oh, and it does 320 miles of range. That's my car. And then they just put up with no buttons. Speaking of which, so how's life with the Cybertruck? You've actually bought one with your own money, right?
That is correct. Took delivery. I've been living with it, probably close to 2,000 miles with it now. Look, it's really interesting. But now, maybe not later, but right now, it's really interesting to live with a Cybertruck. And you experienced this already. You did, you know, you were through Texas, I think, in the States, and you got all the reactions. It's that constantly.
Yeah, no, that was in LA. No, it was in LA.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, where did we take it? We took it down to like Hermosa Beach and then up in Malibu in the canyons. But we had like a day and a half with it.
That sample just like extend it like that. That is the constant experience with it. You drive around, and I think so. I'm working on my full review of the Cybertruck. It might be out by the time this is, but I think my opening line is like, the most dangerous thing about the Cybertruck is not like the pointy corners. It's not the visibility. It's not the fact that it's 6,000 pounds and does 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. It's not the glare from the stainless steel reflecting people's eyes. No, the most dangerous thing about the Cybertruck is how it makes other people around you on the road behave. Like every time someone passes
them into
you,
idiots.
Yeah, they're holding their phone, they're recording you, they have the windows down, they're like accelerating to get a better shot. It's constant. And it's because it's the first time they've ever seen something that looks like this, and I get it. And I wonder how long this is gonna last. Like, is it gonna still, like when you see a Cybertruck 10 times a day, that's not still going to be the reaction, right? It's surely it'll wear off, but I don't know. I don't know how long it's going to be till then.
Well, traditionally, you know, that was the kind of, you know, supercar. So have you ever driven, you know, a big V12 Lamborghini, you know, Murcielago, Diablo, Aventador? That's the kind of reaction you get. You get these people like circulating around you like flies, and it's really hard. And by the way, you're driving, the Cybertruck is a big, heavy thing, but so are Italian supercars. They're big, wide, heavy. So you're trying to drive this thing, which is actually quite difficult on the road, and then everyone's going everywhere else. But you know, I think I said when I first drove the Cybertruck, the most exotic looking car on the planet is no longer an Italian supercar. It's a, you know, it's a pickup truck from America.
Yeah, and it's also
funny.
Didn't
think I'd be writing that.
It's it's crazy how many, because we live in this world, we know what the Cybertruck is. Lots of people have come up in a parking lot and asked about it, or just like regular people asking about it, and they don't know what it is. They're literally just like, what is that? It looks like a movie. And I say it's a Tesla, and they're like, what, really? What? They've never heard of Cybertruck. They've never heard of this electric pickup truck. So they just see it, and it's just everyone. The masses are just looking at it and in awe. People crossing the sidewalk kind of do like a triple take when you're like at the stoplight. It's really interesting. Yeah.
So have you used it? I know, like, I've seen in the past you had a Model S and you had like a camera arm on the roof, and you really like, you like to get your cars involved in the shooting, right? Is the Cybertruck going to play a role?
Yeah. So this is actually the reason we got it, is to use it as a camera car. So we'd previously been using we did the camera car on the Model S, and that's cool for like track stuff, but you can't really street that. So we are doing something a little smaller, a Rivian R1T with a tow hitch rig with this little Ronin arm built onto it. And we have all the controls built into the truck and the power from the bed and everything. It was great. Cybertruck, we ordered at the same time just to see which would show up first. And we've started using actually one Cybertruck to shoot the other Cybertruck. And it's really good at a lot of the same stuff. It's as fast as any car. It's silent, so you can get the audio from any car. It has a bigger bed, it has more storage, so it might actually be better than the Rivian for what we're doing. But the one thing is, it's not low key at all. The Rivian, you could just drive through town and record a video and no one would even look. And this is not that. So yeah, it's a little bit of both.
So now they see the Cybertruck in the distance, they go, ah, come over, have a look. Then they see you, then they see your crew, and then they're like, ah, right, phoning up their friends, and now you're swamped. And it's not what you need when you're filming a car. And I saw you had Tesla and panel gaps, right? It's the most boring chat in the world. I think you did a video where you said, a bit like the buttons, right? So we bang on about panel gaps and build quality, and yet Tesla's selling more cars than anyone in the world. So do we pretend to care about panel gaps? But really, we don't. But I saw your door wasn't quite lined up. What happened there?
Yeah, that was a weird thing. So we took that delivery of the first Cybertruck, which was borrowed from Ridge. And so we didn't do the delivery inspection. They just shipped it to us. And we noticed the door had kind of a big panel gap, the driver's side door. And I was like, okay, yeah, that checks out, early VIN Tesla. But it started getting worse. So like the door started making weird sounds and the gap started getting a little bit bigger. And it just didn't, I don't know, it seemed like it was broken. And I said that in the video. And then sure enough, like a week after that video, it actually breaks. The door latch had like these two bolts holding it in. And the top one just fell out, and Miles was driving it, fell out into his hand. So it was like hanging loose. So he had to take the bolt, screw it back in, and like tape it down. And then he closed the door and the gap was gone. So I think when I put out that video, Elon eventually saw it and tweeted like, oh yeah, we had this small issue where, you know, the torque strength wasn't quite up to spec on certain door latches, and that's been fixed. Fine, great. I'm sure I could take it into a service center and they'd fix it in 2 seconds. But yeah, that's the type of stuff we see with early, probably the first couple months of a new model from Tesla. And we just kind of know that that's something you're going to probably have to deal with.
Yeah. And I can't think of another company where the CEO is on Twitter/X, literally answering customer complaints in real time. Like, hey, Marquez, yeah, this is how you fix it. I mean, that it's kind of cool, but also like maybe he needs to take a step back from the front line. I don't know.
I kind of respect it. Obviously, there's upsides and downsides. Like, yeah, oh, if the Ford CEO saw a complaint about like the charging port on the F-150 and like directly tweeted at customers on the fix, I'd be like, respect. Like, that's actually pretty impressive. I don't see that very often. But there's all the other stuff that comes with CEOs who tweet too much. So, yeah.
It can get out of hand. It can get out of hand. There was one other thing I wanted to cover with you, and that was your, let's say, slightly controversial review of the Fisker Ocean. Good review, by the way. But have you accidentally bankrupted Fisker? Was that you? Were they going that way anyway?
That was, I would say that it was headed that direction long before my review. And the thing I always say about product reviews is, look, that one product exists in many people's hands. I was not the only one saying the things that I said about that vehicle. But you know, I've reviewed a handful, maybe 30, 40 cars at this point. And that's the first car that was so painfully annoying to use that I just couldn't keep driving it anymore. And so I made the review. I talked about what was wrong with it. And, you know, it's interesting. A lot of the complaints that I had were slated to be fixed in a software update. This big 2.0 software update, which is really interesting because a lot of EVs are computers now. But the cars that are out cannot be over-the-air updated. They had an issue where basically you have to have a technician physically go out to every single car and update the software in person, which is kind of a problem.
Yeah, that kind of defeats the object.
Yeah.
Kind of defeats the object of over-the-air.
Yeah, they wanted them to be over-the-air updatable. But, you know, I reviewed that car, but they said, let us have a second chance. Let us deliver you a car with the newest software. And so they did. So I have been living right outside in the parking lot right now is a Fisker Ocean with the newest software on it. And so you'll have to stay tuned for that review because that's been an experience as well. But I would say that if they are able to stay alive as a company, it would be nice because competition's good and, you know, everybody wins when there's a better option on the market. But yeah, I don't think I was the one to cause, you know, all of the things happening with that company. I would put it that way.
I don't want to cause you sleepless nights and make you feel guilty or anything, but you know, the timing was just there. But you know, I think I thought your review was actually fairly even-handed. You know, the title was scathing, but actually once you got into the ride and the handling and the performance and the way it looks, like you were like, this is good, it's a good car. And it was actually, you know, the software that was kind of hadn't been thought through and wasn't really finished and not kind of laggy and all this sort of stuff that was just making it annoying. And actually, I just want to pick up one thing you said there about the over-the-air soft. So they told you everything that, you know, you said was bad. Oh, that can all be fixed with an over-the-air thing. I remember when I was driving the Cybertruck, my kind of main gripe with it was that low-speed steering. Which I know it's like super high ratio, so you don't have to take your hands off the wheel. It's got the variable ratio. And I just found it so freaky at low speeds. You got the four-wheel steering and you turn your wrists and the car. And I said this to the engineer. I was like, you know, I've got to be honest, I hate that steering. And he's like, oh, yeah, don't worry about that. We'll just do like a we're going to offer like 2, 3, 4 more different steering tunes and we'll just fire them at your car while you're sleeping. And I'm like, in the past, you had to design a car, engineer a car. It had to be on sale for like 3, 4 years minimum. And you just had to live with the settings. And now it's just like, we'll just fix that. Don't you worry about that.
It's amazing how much of it is, how much of it is controlled by the computers, the car. And they'll push off dates to give it more power or, you know, better range, all this sort of stuff. It's crazy.
Crazy. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to Fisker Ocean Part 2, The Revenge. The Revenge of Fisker.
Of course.
But I really appreciate you talking to us. Love your first column. Can't wait to hear what you write about next. And just glad to have you on board. And let's keep talking.
For sure. Appreciate it.